I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
You can say it. Go ahead.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Feel better? Is that nice?
It feels right. It feels right.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whiskers as we continue sailing the seas of the year 2032.
Yeah.
Beneath the seas lies the dangers.
Lots of dangers. Lots of fish that make you go, eh.
That's pretty much all the fish I say.
I mean, yeah. I'm always like, oh, look at this cool sea creature. And you're like, eh. But look at it. You can see its guts.
I don't want to see its guts. That's the last thing I want to see is its guts.
I want to see its guts.
Yeah, I know.
The gutsier. Or? The see-through-ier with the, like, a distinct lack of guts. Pretty cool, too.
Sure. Okay. We're talking, like, jellies and such now.
Yeah. Okay. I love a jelly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I prefer preserves.
I'll preserve you.
Yeah, okay.
After I murder you.
And that's on the record. So this new season is, and our talk about it and around it is really defined by, you know, the top line change in the opening credits. Mr. Michael Ironside, legendary star of the screen.
Yes.
The wonderful resource at SeaQuestVault.com has the curator's, like, personal thoughts on Michael Ironside, his career, his place in SeaQuest, and also a transcript of his meeting at a London Comic Con some year or other that I thought we would read because I think it's nice.
Okay.
So I'll be Michael Ironside.
Okay.
And you can be Mr. SeaQuest Vault.
Okay.
I love that there are some stage directions in here, so...
Are we reading the stage directions too? I think we have to.
I mean, how else would we set the scene? Sees me approaching in the sea suit. Oh, wow. Look at this.
Mr. Ironside, sir. It's a real pleasure. Lays phone, photos, etc. on table. I'm afraid I'm going to keep you busy for a little while.
Looks at still of Captain Hudson. Oh, boy. I remember the day this shot was taken.
At Universal Orlando, right?
Yeah, it was my first day, and I just had an argument with the producers about that damn dolphin. I told them there was no way I was going to interact with it.
Oh, really? Darwin?
Right. I'd come on with the understanding that we were doing something different. They'd had their chance with the whole exploration thing, with what they'd tried previously and couldn't make it work. When I came on, I was determined to take it in another direction, starting with having nothing to do with that dolphin. It was a superfluous character. I mean, he didn't talk to fish.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, as an actor, what was it like replacing the lead in an established show? Did Roy Scheider express any regret to you about leaving?
Well, he trashed it. He'd gone on air and trashed it, and they were trying to pick up the pieces and do something new.
Right, but he came back for a few episodes, though. I thought the scenes with the two captains pitted against each other were pretty electric.
He was under contract. He would just shoot his scenes and go home. Usually in a two-shot, both actors are there for the reactions, but he used to go back to his trailer. I said he'd better not do that with me, and he stayed. Actually, later he came by and told me he respected the fact that I told him to stay around. He was a pro, but he could be a bit of a knob, and that's something I'd say to somebody's face. I never say anything that I wouldn't say to their face. But he didn't want to be around, probably off getting another facelift. Laughs.
Well, I have something for you to commemorate your time on the show, just to say thanks from the fans, as we thought you were awesome. And presents plaque.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
There's a guy from the U.S. that found out you were coming here. He's military himself, so had this made for you.
I appreciate it. I had a great time on that show. Shame it didn't go on.
Thanks so much for your time.
Looks at uniform again. That's so funny. I like your haircut.
Dude's bald. So, did it take him longer to warm up to us because I had a mini Darwin?
Maybe.
Did I, like, set the vibe off wrong because he really hates that dolphin so much? That he was like, it would have been fine if they didn't bring the dolphin.
The funniest thing about the way he talks about Darwin is just, he didn't talk to fish. Like, that would make the character less superfluous. If he could translate fish language.
Why can't he tell us what that giant squid is doing? This is useless.
Which, you know what? That could have come up, you know?
What?
Lucas could be like, oh yeah, I patched the firmware on the translator thing.
What? Why? What if there was an episode where they, like, were trying to find something and, you know, lost it, just disappeared out of nowhere. And they were like, oh man, we don't know where it went. And they were like, hey, Darwin, go ask the fish if they saw anything. Fish.
Yeah. Go ask around.
And he comes back and he's like, oh yes, the sea turtle that lives under the coral said XYZ.
Well, the moldy sneeze told me.
The sea cucumber also thought he heard something.
So,
but he doesn't have ears, so like, we'll take his word with a grain of salt.
Another great bit is obviously, yeah, he could be a bit of a knob, and that's something I'd say to somebody's face. That's very Michael Ironside.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah, absolutely. So, like, this is very, very consistent with the much more recent encounter we had with him at different shows. Autograph Line just was this 6-8 months ago now?
7 months ago. I'm pretty sure it was in March.
Sure, yeah.
It was March or April. I don't know at this point. What is time? What is time? It gets dark at like 4:50 right now. Like, I can't. We're done. We're done with life until March again.
But yeah, like, I love the confirmation that, you know, at least when he's around really appreciative fans, he looks back to the good times. He had fun on set. He enjoyed making Sequest 2032.
Yes.
He didn't. Some people he dealt with were knobs. He wishes it was more successful at turning things around. But, you know, I can't disagree with him there either.
I wish you had many more episodes. I told you this to your face. They screwed you over.
And so that brings us to Season 3, Episode 3, Smoke on the Water. That's a non sequitur title. That is a visual effect that is not part of this episode.
There's really not smoke.
There's nothing on the water.
It's in the water. There's a lot of stuff in the water.
This is a 100% below the surface episode.
Yes. Anything that you think is not is in an undersea colony with fake light.
But sometimes the title is just a title. This one was written by Lee Goldberg and William Rabkin in their Sequest writer's credit debut. They are writing partners since the late 1980s. You can see their work together on Murphy's Law, Cobra, Baywatch, Diagnosis Murder, Monk. They created the Mystery 101 series for Hallmark Channel. And both of them are also supervising producers for the 2032 year. This one is directed by returning director Oscar El Costo, returning from Dreamweaver and Dagger Redux most recently. And so we start with an establishing shot of Hudson's old boat? No, it is not.
It's not.
It is a different hauler, and they recycle that model that was really, really good, because why wouldn't they? It is another hauler, sure.
Yeah, and they're in the mid-Atlantic free zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a new term. We didn't get those before.
Yeah.
The free zones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a guy on this hauler talking to dispatch at this colony, and they're flirting through their entire conversation.
The dispatcher here is played by Elizabeth Rothen, who we saw previously as the reporter in The Sincerest Form of Flattery. She was covering the panic and evacuation of New Cape Quest.
Oh!
As Robo-Bridger was trying to kill them all.
Ah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess she's changed jobs in the past 10 years.
I think this is a different character. I don't think.
I think it's. I don't think this
is a Howard Mason situation.
I think it's the same person.
Okay.
We're gonna go with it.
Well, she's become wheelchair bound in the decade since.
There were wars.
There were wars. That's true.
Car accidents, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Has a new career path, though. Doing pretty good for herself.
Doing dispatching, yeah.
Got planning a date.
Either way, there is a microphone involved.
The hauler is on his way to deliver his cargo,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about how, like, he's doing okay, which is surprising, because a lot of other haulers have just disappeared.
Yeah, it's been 3 months since anyone carrying ore out of this mining colony has actually, you know, made their delivery.
And not just disappeared.
Disappeared without a trace.
And he's like, I'm fine, we're gonna have a date later, everything's good, it's all great.
The set that Dispatch is in really reminds me of the like the very first scene of the first episode, To Be or Not to Be, when that guy is claim jumping and he's radioing back to his dispatch, and
kind of
it's reminiscent.
It's bigger. It's a lot bigger. The space in that one was a lot smaller, a lot more cramped,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
a lot more buttons viewable.
Well, the technology is developed such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get more space.
You don't have to be in just a ding-dang closet.
Yeah. So another lady comes in,
mm-hmm.
And interrupts their flirty time, mm-hmm. and is like, hey, scan your area for me. And he's like, I just did it. It's fine. No, do it. Scan the area. Okay, fine. I scanned it. I'm alone. It's all good. And then emergency alarms start going off. He is not fine. He's not okay. Fine.
I don't think he's going to be the first to make it in 3 months. We do not have to reset the clock.
This lady not getting a date.
And that's when the ocean eats Cash.
Yeah, well, we never said his name. His name was Cash.
His name is Cash.
The
hauler pilots before him were named Jobs.
Yeah.
And Hope. Yeah.
Yeah. They lose contact with him. They're yelling for him through the radio. He is stunned watching something close around the windows,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and darkness overtake him.
Which is a pretty stunning thing to see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that is basically where we end our cold open in this 2-minute scene that sets up the premise of the episode, the problem to be solved, as well as three characters and the three different relationships in this triangle among them. It's really dense, and they do talk fast.
Yes.
But it's still impressive all the same.
So when we come back, McGath is like, hey, it's been like 3 months and a lot of haulers have disappeared and...
Cash was number 13.
You need to go figure out this problem. And Hudson and Ford are like, why have you waited 3 months?
Well, this colony, the Perseid colony, is not UEO affiliated. They're wildcat miners, and they still have not filed a formal request for help.
Yeah.
So they're going unasked for, just out of the goodness of their hearts. That's how McGath does things, right? He's such a humanitarian.
Yeah. Well, what we really get down to is Dion's involved.
It's Dion Global.
Mm-hmm.
These wildcat miners, they supply Dion's companies, his subsidiaries. They're his number one supplier. And the UEO wants to get in and fix the problem before they turn to him to fix the problem, which would be his lever for just taking them over outright and making them a subsidiary as well. The UEO does not want that to happen.
Yeah.
So while Hudson is picking this up and is very worried about Dion even more than McGath is, Ford is just like, do you have any clues?
Anything?
Anywhere to start. Any leads?
Not really.
Because Ford wants to be a detective so bad.
He's like, "Nah, I don't really know anything, but Constable Elaine Morse will give you more info when you know you get there."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Hudson suddenly looks like he has heartburn,
which, as we know, is a fatal condition.
I thought it was the one time I had it. I did not know what it was. I was like, am I having a heart attack at like 28 years old? I don't know. And then someone was like, that's heartburn. And I was like, this is fucking what it is? This sucks. I've only had it like twice in my life. And both times I was like, heart attack? What the fuck?
I love you, dear.
I love you too.
So Sequest arrives at the Perseid colony. It is a great big ball under the sea.
Like most colonies are.
A lot of them are domes, but this is like a whole sphere on legs.
It's just a taller dome.
It's got a bottom part.
Yeah.
It's a double dome.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
It just stretched.
Sure.
Yeah.
We've got some things to do and a certain number of people involved, but there's so much more crew. You know, all the ones involved in, like, making the boat go, and the boat's not going. You know what that means?
Shore leave!
Shore leave! Yay!
We're gonna party it up!
And as soon as O'Neill stands up to follow that order, Ford's like, hey, O'Neill, you got first watch, and he sits right back down.
Fine. And as soon as Lucas is like, okay, well, I'm gonna, like, go check out this really cool, like, ultrasonic refinement process they got. Because that's what I do on my shore leave is...
It's research?
Work.
Of industrial processes? Not even computers. He's many hats. It's the Westphalen way.
And Hudson's like, no, actually not. You're gonna do a diagnostic.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
what you're gonna do, because... I said so.
Yes.
And Lucas is mad.
He's so mad.
So I'm like, but you were going to go work anyways.
But he does ship work all the time. He wants to do mining work.
Yeah. So he's not too happy about that. He's very upset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he goes off. And everyone's getting ready for their shore leave, mm-hmm. and very excited, and Lucas has to walk through them, and Tony's all like, hey man, shore leave's the other way, where are you going? And Lucas is like, you're not going anywhere. You have to run a full diagnostic of the ship, Tony. And he's like, but that's your job. Yeah, but I'm an officer, so I'm telling you to do it.
Asshole! Huge asshole!
Just because you're upset doesn't mean you get to make everyone else upset, Lucas.
So something that is unique to season three among the three Sequest seasons is the serialized, like, character arc subplot.
Yes.
We talked about in season one how the show is made for a syndication model, where in any given episode you will learn a fact about a character, and then you assemble all the facts to make a full picture.
Yes.
But now we're getting Lucas gets an officer commission, then Lucas is kind of a jerk getting on his old roommate's nerves about it, and now just full-on asshole.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's development week to week in, let's see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Tony's just stunned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very upset. Feels betrayed.
He was gonna show all these minor ladies his new pickup lines.
Yeah.
He was so excited.
Brody's like, you know what? It's okay. They've probably heard them all before. They're there. And Dagwood's also like, they're there. Doesn't know why, but this is what people are doing to Tony. So yes. He's gonna do it too. It must be a form of saying goodbye.
Yeah, so he touches his head in a strange way and then bobs his head like a chicken in a very strange way.
There. Yeah.
This also tells us that the mining colony life has developed since season one, where in Sea West, that mining colony outside UEO purview was so desperate for women, they were just like bussing them in.
Yeah.
Now there's enough women there, that's the attraction, at least for Piccolo.
Yes.
I don't know if he's done demographic research. He might just be assuming. I don't know.
I mean, well, we already saw more women living on this colony than we did before. It's so, true. You know.
Up until the next scene, it might be 100% women on this colony.
So on the colony, Henderson, Brody, and Dagwood go to eat lunch together, and we learn about racism.
Yeah, it exists.
Racism is there.
The host at the restaurant, actually, hey, 3 for 3, still 100% women living on this colony, says, well, you two are welcome to take a table, but you have to go. And she points to a little sign that says, no daggers allowed.
And so Henderson and Brody are like, well, we don't want to eat here anyways. Yeah, let's go.
Fuck you. Henderson says something about apartheid being abolished 50 years ago. She's yes. so confused that legal racism is back again.
And Dagwood's like, no, you should eat. I'm not hungry. You should definitely eat. Why would I want to eat where I'm not wanted? And they're like, why would we want to eat here either? But then as soon as he's like, no, I insist, and leaves, they're like, I guess we'll eat here. Which pisses me the fuck off. No, you're like, no, we're going to go still eat elsewhere.
Well, he did insist. It would be disrespectful not to go to the Jim Crow restaurant.
Don't go to the racist restaurant. Go find a non-racist restaurant. Oh. It's not hard.
Henderson, I expected better from you. Brody,
maybe they should, like, bring this up with the people in charge of this colony in a little bit. When we meet them. Like, hey, your colony's racist.
Your colony is super racist.
So Dagwood goes wandering around and very quickly finds a nightclub.
A nightclub called The Dagger's Sheath.
Yes. With, like, the most, like, sci-fi Borg font. Yeah.
That's how we were all going to be writing in the future, and we still have 7 years for that dream to come true.
We just have, like, boring fonts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arial. Bleh. It's so legible. Ugh.
Ugh. Why?
So,
at least we're not all using Comic Sans anymore.
So he enters the Dagger's Sheath and finds Mannequin's Nightclub on Disney's Pleasure Island. This is the one that I was that I knew for 100% certain was. And once, you know, he walks around in there. Yeah, last week was too. This is absolutely the same filming location.
It's such a weird ass place. So he gets off an elevator.
Yes.
And, like, see some weird-ass mannequins.
Yeah.
See some, like, butterfly wings. Just, like, random shit.
Mm-hmm.
That very much makes you think, this is, like, the pre-show for a show at Disney. Makes you think of, like, the Muppet 3D, like, pre-show where there's just junk everywhere.
Yes, yes. Junk for you to look at for about 5 to 15 minutes.
Yeah. So then, like, he walks down a little bit, and the elevator let him off above the club?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking down through fencing at the club. That's a weird design. Why do you have to take the elevator up to then go down?
Because it's all about the reveal. It's about the unveiling. It's about setting a mood.
I feel like you could get people in and out of this building much faster.
Well, the clientele could all just, like, say, in the event of a fire, punch through the wall and run out.
Yeah.
Now, I think it is interesting that of all the like, care for continuity in both seasons that season 3 tries to maintain, they seem to have forgotten that dagger is meant to be a slur.
They've reclaimed it.
The word Gelf. The acronym GELF never comes
absolutely
back.
Absolutely
no,
never.
No, it's
hear
all
it.
Daggers all the time.
Yeah. Well, language has evolved in 10 years.
Sure. Yeah. It is a 100% reclaimed slur. Everyone is using it on the crew.
Whether you still mean it as a slur or not, it's all fine.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, in this world. There's also just, like, I don't know, a lot. It makes me, like, go, like, how many did they make?
How many people did they paint?
No, like, how many, like...
Oh, like, in the narrative.
In the narrative.
Sure. They're having babies now. They've been having babies for 10 years. Everyone here is way older than 10.
Everyone here is an adult. So my question still stands of, like, how many? Because, like, that Guelph colony, very much it, like, okay, I never assumed it was the only one, but they really, like, acted like this is the colony.
This is where we put them all yes. 2 dozen of them.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm like, there's...
And now there's a grand society.
There's, like, 5 dozen in this nightclub alone.
Yeah, in this one nightclub, in this one independent colony. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's got to be, like, I don't know, little Guelph village back in New Cape Quest, if that city still exists with, you know, the 10 years time skip.
Yeah, it's probably flooded.
In the island of San Diego, there's Guelph Town. There's got to be, right?
So Dagwood immediately sees a girl and is like...
A girlf.
Hi.
So in season 2, we learned that, well... Daggers exist. They're out in the world, and as we check in, we see that they are often discriminated against. You can't get a lap dance if you've got Dagwood's whole thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Season 3 says that, you know, that discrimination might well be formal as you go from place to place, and also would lead to a Guelph subculture. That is interesting. That is a concept. That is the last nice thing I'm going to say about the C plot this week. I don't like this.
Yeah.
It's a concept, and then there's an execution.
Yeah. Back on the Sequest, the launch with Constable Morse comes aboard, and Ford and Hudson are there to greet her with a whole lot of people waiting to go on their shore leave on that boat when it returns. And
Constable Elaine Morse is the lady in charge of the colony from the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
And she is played by Patricia Charbonneau, who was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award back in 1985 for her film debut in the film Desert Hearts. She went on to be in projects such as Michael Mann's Manhunter, RoboCop 2, She's All That, and a whole lot of TV guest spots over the years, this included.
She comes in guns a-blazing, let me tell ya.
Figuratively, at
least. Yes. She comes off that launch and walks right past the boys as everyone's like getting on the launch and is like... Wow, you're taking this seriously. Everyone is leaving your boat. What the fuck, dude?
They've only had 13 ships go missing with all souls aboard, lost forever.
But yeah, everyone have vacation right now. Great idea. And she just goes, like, walking away down the hallway with the boys following behind, and Ford like, what the fuck?
Again, desperate for clues. He wants to be a detective so bad. It is his driving motivation in all these scenes.
Well, yeah, he's like, so can you give us some details of what happened? And she's like, there aren't any. There's none. We know not. They just disappeared. That's all we have.
The doctor was the mother. Ah, I see.
Hudson is still looks like he has heartburn. And is trying to kind of shut her down. It's like, here's what we're gonna send the fighters after, following the haulers. Keep an eye out for anything. It'll be fine.
He wants to, just like set up a perimeter and search for clues. He's kind of on Ford's side with this. And Constable Moore says, no, fuck that. We have all these loads of ore that need to go out, and you are going to shepherd a colony.
Yes.
And so that is... That sparks an argument between her and Captain Hudson because that's a short-term solution. We need to tear the root out of the problem, or else what? We're just going to be your convoy tender for the rest of our lives. What is this?
And she says some things back, and it makes him snap, going, "Damn it, Eileen!" Or Elaine. Damn it, Elaine.
And Ford pieces it together. As soon as first names come out, he really is a detective. There is a look of recognition on Commander Ford's face.
And Hudson looks at him like, fuck. He's like, that's what we're gonna do. And he goes to walk away, but then the power fluctuates and he's like, what the fuck's going on? And so he radios the bridge and Tim's like, I don't know what's going on. Like, Piccolo was pushing some buttons and then this happened.
Ah, Tony fucked it. Ah, nuts.
And so on the bridge, we see Tony, like, pacing around with Lucas in, like, the chair, clicking a bunch of buttons, and he's just like, I don't know what happened! Like, I did what I was supposed to, and then this happened! And Lucas is like, it's because you didn't, take it offline. He's like, I didn't know I was supposed to do that! And Hudson comes in during all this, and he's like, and why didn't you know that? Because I've never done this before.
It's his first solo full diagnostic. He's doing it unsupervised and unaided. By the time this conversation is halfway through, Lucas has already fixed the immediate problem. But that's more than enough time for the captain to figure out exactly what happened here.
Yes. Such as, why the fuck were you doing this instead of Tony? Lucas tries to say some bullshit about, like, giving Tony experience and blah. He's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, no. All right.
You being an ass.
You just wanted to pass off your grunt work you didn't want to do when we had shore leave coming. Yeah. And so he essentially tells him to like, scrub down the entire ship with a toothbrush.
Yes.
Basically. But the computer version of that. Well,
because they know that there's, like, what the underlying issue is. And it's something that, like, oh, it will take, like, 30 minutes to fix if you do it automatically. It's like, well, no. Manually. It's like, manually, it will take, like, 2 days with the entire crew. Alone. Manually alone.
So
have fun.
So, yeah, instead of just running the diagnostic again to find the fault that causes this issue, he's got to go look at all of the, like, wires by hand.
Circuit by circuit.
Meanwhile, O'Neill still doesn't get shore leave, and no one cares about that. No one's talking to him. No one's like, oh, Tim, I missed you in the racist restaurant. I know how much you love racist restaurants.
Tony also doesn't get shore leave, because he's like, so, like, when you say I should leave, Captain Hudson, sir, like, you mean shore leave, right?
Leave?
And he's like, I hear about your journey of, like, self-betterment. Maybe go do that.
Yeah, I recommend the library, Mr. Piccolo. So, everyone is given their marching orders, and Ford's like, hey, Cap, I know this is, like, kind of your thing, but you're, like, doing your thing really hard today.
He's like, I just say I have a bad mood. And Ford just looks at him. Ah, Ford has such good looks in this. Yes. Like, there is so much being said with just eye contact. And eventually Hudson's like, fine, we had a history. And I was hoping to never see her again. And Ford is like, well, where did you meet her? At the altar. I left her there twice. What the fuck, Hudson?
Now, that being the answer to where did you meet her, it sounds like they got an arranged marriage.
Either an arranged marriage.
Or he's just, like, skipping a few steps. Or,
I don't know, was he, like, working at the altar and she just wandered in and they were like, you know.
It was Vegas, you know.
Why not?
Leave me a jilted bride once, shame on you. Leave me a jilted bride twice, shame on me.
What about if in this, like, fake future, now past type thing? Because who knows when exactly they met?
Sure.
Like, speed dating actually took place at the altar. Like, your speed dating was super challenged, and you were there, and you either got married or you walked away. And they just, like, matched, like, twice. They showed up to the same two speed dating rounds.
Yeah, it was, like, within a month. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you again?
God damn it, Elaine! Oliver?
Anyhow,
we go to commercial and we come back 3 weeks later.
Yes, 3 weeks later. Lucas is still diagnosticing.
The teen is becoming humbled.
And Tony's like, man, I can't believe you still haven't found it. I'd love to help, but I got leave. I'm gonna go.
And as soon as it leaves his mouth, he takes like a step and a half and is like, ah, nuts, I'm actually a responsible young man. And he turns around and is like, hey, pal, you want some help?
And at first, Lucas says yes, but then he's like, no, I have to learn my lesson. Captain Hudson gave me this job. I must make my new papa proud. Yeah.
That's how I got into this mess, was not doing the job Hudson gave him. So he's going to do the job Hudson gave him.
Yes. McGath is on the phone with Ford and Hudson and Morse and is like, congratulations, not a single holler has disappeared. You've done a great job. You can go on your way now. Also, Dion International has a thank you message for you. Even though we're like trying not to involve them, but listen to this guy.
Hey, they're the ones buying all this ore that got lost. Of course they're thankful. And so, yes, this subsidiary director of whatever division, Dustin Thaw, is here to convey his thanks. He's played by Brett Rice, who we previously saw as the UEO prison guard in the robot Prison Break opening to Dagger Redux. This is the guy that's in all the football movies.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, the Secretary General is here to say that, you know, after you've shepherded a few halls, we can assume the problem is fixed forever. That's the McGath way.
Those pirates got scared. They're not going to come around again. It's fine.
The most successful Secretary General in UEO history. The rest seem to last about 6 months apiece.
So when they get off the phone, Elaine is not happy.
No,
she not happy.
In fact, she like has been yelling at the Secretary General the very same things Captain Hudson was arguing with her about. Like, we need to find the source of the problem.
Yes. You know, justice, because a lot of people have died.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that. No one's talking about the fact that not just these haulers have disappeared. Yeah. But we're assuming that everyone on board is dead.
Yeah, there's like a lot of widows and orphans left from these crews.
What? I'm sure there's folk music in the future.
I'm sure there's folk music in the future is the name of my memoir. It peaked at number 7 on the New York Times charts.
It's like if Wally, instead of finding Hello Dolly, found just like a burned CD of a collection of folk songs. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that Wally was not into Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
That would have been interminable.
Just watching, like, I don't know, clips of like the Vietnam War or something.
And then Wally's like, yeah, this shit rules. I love napalm. It's my favorite. Get over here, you little bug. I'm going to fuck you up.
And then when Eve comes, he's just like really obsessed with her guns.
Oh, well, we know that Tony Piccolo was obsessed with the guns of that lady who tried to send him a drink.
I don't like that we've ruined Wally. This makes me sad. Wally's perfect. He needs to be protected.
Yeah, put him in the Criterion closet and lock the key for his own safety.
Let him be. He deserves happiness.
Lock the key. That's not how things work. Ah.
So they have some words, they often do. He cracks a joke about their wedding, which does not go over well.
No,
and he's like, hey, I haven't said anything in like 3 weeks. This is personal. This is like fine. And she's like, it's absolutely not. Like, no. I would punch you. So she like power walks away and like slams into Ford, you know, because they're like both walking down the hallway instead of like, you know,
the beautiful, beautiful just, like, Sequest hallways.
Elbows him. And Hudson, you know, follows along and they watch her go, and he's like, you know, tells him, like, hey, have the crew return. We're leaving in 30 minutes, which is a really quick turnaround, let me tell you.
Yeah. And then he's like, all right, Ford, ask your question. He's allowing Ford to ask personal questions and to get into his life. He is human after all.
And I love this. I like so much of this episode so much. Mm-hmm. I love this where he's like watching her still. Like, she's gone down that hallway. You can't even see her, but he's looking that way. And like, does not look at Ford when he says it.
Yeah.
Like, Ford's in the background and he's like, ask it, you know? He's like, sir, like, what? I'm going to make you say it because I'm not going to say it till you tell me I can say it. And so he does ask, you know, what happened?
Yeah, what happened between?
Why are you guys like this?
Yeah.
Hudson's answer is, could have spent a lifetime together, but she always had to have the shower first. She has hair, dude. It needs to dry before she, like, goes to bed. You're bald. You're fine.
You wouldn't get it, you bald ass. Come on. If I got a really short haircut, I could say that. It'd be fine for me. with that revelation that, you know, sometimes it's the little things, we go back to the dagger sheath and see that Dagwood has spent 3 weeks just eating sherbet at the same high top table in a nightclub with this same lady.
Who says, I just love watching you eat. Which is fucked up and weird.
That's a weird thing to say.
I don't like That's this very lady. Strange. That's fucking weird.
So his new girlfriend is named Rachel. She's played by Holly Gagnier, who had stints on One Life to Live, Days of Our Lives, and General Hospital. Dang. She got the hat trick.
Like the Holy Trinity.
As far as wet things, she was also in the cast of Pacific Blue and Baywatch.
Mm. They have a little back and forth about how, you know, she wishes he didn't have to go, and he's like, but Sequest is leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I gotta go, it's my home. And she starts questioning him about, you know, what do you even do there?
And he mentions cleaning and moving very, 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 very heavy things.
Yes. And so she is like, oh, so they just like having, you know, a dagger around to like do hard work because you don't complain and you don't get tired and you're basically a slave to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is her opinion that clearly he's just being kept around for scut work, which should not be his life because he is a man, legally. He has been for the entire run of the character.
So this gets him thinking enough that he goes back to Hudson and wants to leave.
Yeah, he wants to leave Navy. I was in Navy, and now I don't want to be in Navy.
And he's like, you enlisted. You can't unlist. Like, do you know how long you signed up for? And he holds up four fingers, and he's like, months? Weeks.
Years, big guy. Years. 4 years.
Which I do feel like someone should have explained to him before he signed the contract.
Yes. Yes, actually.
Seems like this might not be a binding contract if, like, he doesn't know that.
But it is also a very long time to be separated from a society that you belong to and just learned existed.
Yes.
Like, I... Actually, you know what? Addendum to last week's opening segment. Where is Dagwood's niece? I want to see a 10-year-old gelf run around being like, oh my god, Uncle Dagwood.
What if they grow up really fast?
What if they grow up really fast? What if we learned that was Rachel?
I was going to say, oh
What
my
if
god.
That was Rachel?
That's what I was going to say. Like, fuck, you got to like make sure we know where our relatives are 10 years later.
That's why there are so many girls running around. Like, okay, they might look like they're 32. They're 7.
This is the
they're
kids' 4. Club.
Yeah.
You wandered into the kids' club. That's why there's butterfly wings just hanging out.
I mean, we know how it works. You just put Peter DeLuise in a series of different sized diapers in a tube.
And you get glowy drinks. They had glowy shots. Those are definitely not made from natural flavors.
Well, they're an unnatural people, you see. It's thematic.
What if their approach to the Guelphs was that, like, they glowed green and blue?
Why would they glow? The skin pattern is supposed to be like camouflage and stealth. Why would they glow? Because
that's what the shots were doing. So it made me think about, what if you transferred it? And ooh, they glowed in those colors, though. Kind of like, what's his name from Farscape when he takes his mask off?
Like Stark.
Stark, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always forget his name.
He's the best one.
He's not the best
one. He's the best one. He's my favorite little man.
He's not mine.
Who's your favorite little man? It's Dargo.
Pilot. I go with Pilot. Pilot's my favorite little man.
Pilot's a very special boy.
Yeah.
So anyhow, Captain Hudson, I mean, he's had 3 weeks to deal with seeing his ex, so he's no longer... So he's fallen out of, like, severe mode.
Yes.
And says, hey, bud, you just had a whole world open up for you. You know what we're going to do? I'm going to give you 48 hours leave, and then I send a shuttle. If you're not on that shuttle, you will be legally declared a deserter, but you're getting 48 hours to put your ducks in a row.
That is more time than Captain Bridger gave Lucas to figure out if he wanted to marry a girl or not. Just going to say. Lucas got like 24 hours.
Maybe Bridger was always kind of a bad guy.
He just didn't want Lucas to have enough time to get a marriage license. Yeah. Like, 24 hours, that's all we can give him. We give him 48, he can get a marriage license, he can go elope. Like, we're not doing that.
But Captain, the line is so long. It's all day.
So Dagwood goes back to the colony and watches the Sequest leave through, like, a porthole window.
Well, before that, he gets a lesson on what it means to be declared a deserter.
Oh, yes.
And that would come with, like, an arrest and jail time. So now we can say for sure Dagwood understands the concept of imprisonment.
Yes.
He now, he gets that. Not when he was threatened with it. No. Not then, but he does now.
Because it's been explained to him.
Yes. Time has passed in between.
I appreciate that Hudson, like, caught on that, like, oh, I should explain other things to him. Mm-hmm, and not just assume he knows before he signs a contract.
Yeah, yeah. The way he explains things to Dagwood is as if he's explaining something with, like, niche information or things that take special expertise.
Yes.
It's like, how do you know anything if you haven't had a chance to learn it?
Yes.
And while these are basic things, like, hey, you should read the thing before you sign it. There's an important term in there. He never talks down to Dagwood in that way.
No. Which is very nice.
Which is like, yeah. He has learned how to work with pretty much all of his people by now, after yes. That was a big thing in the previous episode.
Well, it has been, like...
They've had a couple weeks. A
few months now.
Yeah.
So, in addition to seeing the Sequest leave, there's also Huller leaving. Mm-hmm. Huller's off for the first time on its own, and Elaine and the other lady are doing their jobs, you know, radioing to them, checking in.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? We're feeling good, feeling fine. This first unescorted hauler is definitely going to deliver its load, for sure.
Totally be fine.
It's gonna be fine.
So on the Sequest, Lucas is depressed. Lucas is not eating. Lucas is not the same without Dagwood.
Give him a sun lamp. Gotta put him on his special heat rock.
Lucas is like, it's not the same without him. Mm-hmm. And Henderson's like, well, you know, you gotta, like, suck it up because he's probably not coming back. And he's like, no, Sequest is his home. Like, we're his family. And they're like, yeah, but those are his people.
I do feel like Dagwood, in the 3 weeks, would have insisted that Rachel and Piccolo meet. Like, how does... Just logically...
So Ford, like, Henderson's just like, you gotta get over it, Lucas. Like, this is what's probably happening. And Ford is, like, the one who kind of catches on to, like, there's a little bit more going on here. Mm-hmm. And mentions how, kind of tries to be like, well, Lucas, like, you both, you know, came to the Sequest, you were kind of outsiders, this is probably why you're having a hard time with this.
You both had a lot to prove, and yeah, yeah.
Also, you were a child, and this is your home, and the only home you know, and it's been 10 years, and who knows if your family's alive, and like, we are your only family, so I understand you're going through a lot of emotions right now.
Maybe he's mourning Ortiz right now a little bit and not voicing that.
You know, and maybe...
It's welling up with the idea of someone else from the crew leaving.
Did Dagwood tell him, hey, Lucas, I might not be coming back? Or did Richard he just leave? And are we having some PTSD about what happened, about being left behind again?
Oh no, the abandonment issues. Oh no, they're back. Oh no.
So Lucas storms off. and is like, well, maybe I just want to see a friend again, and just leaves. He's like, I can't handle this. I can't handle these adults. Even though I'm an adult, can't handle it.
I gotta check circuits.
And it's very, like, silly in some regards, but when you start to think about all those layers, it's like,
Oh, the boy.
And Ford is just so aware of everything in this episode. He's...
Well, not everything.
Well, no. I mean, he picks up. Because Henderson's like, oh man, Sequest is a complicated place for relationships. And he's like, what does that mean? And, figure it out.
As she wears her most sleeveless of uniforms.
He had a smirk. He knows what she
means. Yeah.
He's not that clueless. He knows.
So meanwhile, out in the open ocean, unescorted hauler.
I just have to say, I will never understand them trying to make Brody, though, the, like, smoky hot dude, when you have Ford. That man smiles, and, like, people will be groveling at his feet.
He says so. He's too good looking.
He's too good looking.
So let's do it.
Kills me. Kills me every time.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, look at this hot dude. No. Look at that man. Right there. It's charming. He's trying to solve people's emotional problems.
He wants to be a detective
He wants to be a detective. He loves the ballet. Like, come on.
He does a Die Hard one time.
He can be Die Hard. There is nothing this man can't do.
I've never heard him say boys will be boys about sexual assault.
I've never been concerned about him being around women, no. If he ran past me while I was running solo, I would not be afraid.
Yeah.
Brody, I would pick up the speed. I'd go a lot faster.
I'm suddenly turning left now. This is planned. This is part of my route all
along.
This is
definitely planned. Yep. Anyway, so the hauler.
Turns out it could have used that escort, actually. Things are not good for them.
Nope. It's not good. It has a red alert going on. The Sequest does, like, pick up on there's some stuff going on.
They're very nearby because they leap into action trying to defend this hauler from a pair of attack subs.
Yes.
Sub fighters.
And so Hudson tells them to announce them forcefully.
Yes. So we get, yes, an exchange of torpedoes and then intercept countermeasures. And he calls out a tricky maneuver and signals Tony for when to hit that vector with, like, a slap on the shoulder. Speaking of Brody, he and Freddy are out in their sub-fighters, dogfighting out there. Ah, all the stuff is happening.
Yeah, crazy shit.
The hauler they're trying to protect is starting to take on water. Oh no.
So Henderson goes out with a launch, but then there's, like, a bandit on her. So, like, then, like, the Spectre's gotta blow that up. And so they do. And she goes and laser docks with the hauler, which is, like, the coolest fucking thing.
Laser dock. It's so good. It's not quite to the season one degree, but, like, the different craft have different uses. The tools kind of matter again.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, we're never seeing that HR probe again, but in spirit, at least we have the docking ring.
And so then, like, they grappling torpedo one of, like, the enemy little ships
mm-hmm,
and grab it, and they head back to the colony.
And so it is time to pop some champagne. We caught the pirates. Hooray.
I guess. Though I've just realized in this whole thing, like, yeah. There's nothing that's like, oh, we're gonna interrogate or find out, or like, they don't do anything with the ship that they caught.
they plan to, but that's when Captain Hudson notices his former beloved is not into champagne time. For the very good reason that this is not how the other ones disappeared. Yes. The MO is completely different. She is not satisfied this is the same problem that they've solved.
Yeah. She's like, no, we didn't. We didn't know that they were there. There was no warning. They just suddenly were gone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Though I'm still like, go interrogate those people. Because like, well, who the fuck are they? What were they doing?
While Hudson is trying to like... be friendly, congenial. He might be angling for altar abandonment number 3 here a little bit.
So she's like, well, Sequest has to stay here. You gotta lead convoys of our haulers. This is not good. You gotta stay.
And before Hudson even gets there to like have this conversation, they've already launched a second attempt at an escorted hauler with this headband lady captain.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, she is. Yes.
And then she gets eaten too.
She gets eaten as well, yes. There's too many haulers, quite honestly. Like, I'm getting a little like, wait, where, what happened?
Well, this one exists for about 2 minutes, and then this lady apparently dies. We never see, like, there's, when the problem does eventually get fixed, there's never like, oh, and we found them all here. No, I think she's dead.
Yeah.
Just to demonstrate that yes, the constable here is entirely correct.
We did not stop the pirates. There are more people out there pirating.
That was an unrelated pirate band.
So, yeah, she wants him to keep guarding them as they send their haulers out. He's like, that's a band-aid.
But Lucas has a plan.
Yes, which is... So they have, like, snide comments at each other again in this, like, you know, conference room of where, like... This says something like, I'm going to shrug my shoulders and leave. And she's like, well, that's your style.
Just
this like stare down. And Lucas is like, him.
This ham is lovely, Captain.
This feels like dinner at my parents before they got a divorce. Flashbacks right now.
But yes, Lucas eventually edges in very, very politely, walking on eggshells a bit, to propose a bait car.
Yes, let's send in a decoy.
We're going to send out a hauler that instead of carrying all of your valuable ore, is just carrying like a lot of tracking devices and extra radar and like a radioactive isotope that we can lock onto. Like every possible... a tracking solution he can think of.
They're like, you know, that's a pretty good idea. We should do that.
Yeah, all right, bait car.
We should do that.
Yeah.
And Lucas lingers behind as everyone goes out to, like, start this idea. And Hudson's like, oh, something I can do for you. And he's like, yeah, I think I should go.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets, like, scolded of, like, is this because, like, you're an ensign? You think you should lead this mission?
You want to be Mr. Glory Hound Hotshot all of a sudden? Is that what it is? And he says, well, no, sir. I just, it wouldn't be right asking anyone to do something that I wasn't willing to do myself. And Hudson is like, yes, finally, the lesson is learned.
That is what I told you about your diagnostic.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. There we go. Okay. The boys come through. All right.
So back on the colony, Dagwood is with Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes off on him.
Yes.
About how he's a slave. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, they're not like that. It's not like that at all.
And her response is, they're monotones. They're all like that. And she goes on to list the historic indignities that have been placed upon the Gelf people. You know, being forced to fight their wars, being shipped off for pressed labor, and on and on. And lady, He was a witness to the first Guelph birth in history. He knows. He was there the whole time. He knows.
He's the prototype.
Like, I bet some wild shit has happened to Daggerkind in the 10 missing years. Okay. But he fucking knows the basics. He knows the outline. He was there when it was written.
Yeah. Jesus.
And so the whole, like, idea of Rachel as a character, and therefore this entire plot, because that's all it is Dagwood getting lectured by Rachel as, hey, perhaps the oppressed classes are themselves imprisoned, not from without, but from within by their own tribalism. Makes you think. Yeah, makes me think I should throw you out the window. This fucking sucks.
Dagwood just wanted to have a good time.
And so, yeah, that is the good, honorable Dagwood has an individual outlook on the world, and he knows that there are good people among all peoples because they are his friends on his boat. But, like, the lady that cares about collective action and justice is blinded. She cannot see the trees for the forests, and that is why she is cast adrift. In a prison of her own mental making. This is a really fucked way to think about liberation.
So back on the sequest. Lucas.
He's wearing fingerless gloves.
Fingerless gloves!
He's got his action gloves.
Yes, they are the action gloves. Brody wears those gloves.
They're hand-me-downs.
Because he thinks he's going on this mission. He's getting Freddy hooked up. Talking about, like, you know, you sure you can drive this thing, giving her, like, coaching her some. Mm-hmm. This is the scene where I think all, like, Lucas and Freddy, like, relationship fanfic comes from.
Because it's the only time they talk?
Yes. And it's because it's, like, Lucas, like, adjusting her straps in fingerless gloves. Everyone was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the interface between the personal and the professional, the technological.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. She is an expert, but, you know, with little craft, and he is an expert in the technical side of this plan, but he can't fly a fucking boat of any size. So there's a mismatch and an asymmetry. I get the idea.
Their personalities are very different, but absolutely. You know, they would help each other. They would grow. They would learn to see different sides. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he hacks her chippy.
Oh my.
Yeah.
What's he do to it?
I don't know. But that's like somewhere in chapter 4 of my saga. He hacks her chippy.
With permission or without? Because type of fic is this?
It depends. We'll see where inspiration takes me.
So many places that could go. but then Hudson comes through and is like, okay, let's get on this boat. And Lucas is like, wait, I thought I was going.
And the captain just repeats Lucas's own words right back to him. Because, you know, if we're going into certain death, it is his job to be on that boat, not any of his subordinates.
Probably especially not the 19-year-old.
Yeah, probably not. Excuse me, his driver's license says he's 28.
Uh-huh. on the hauler, Elaine tells Hudson he's a bad driver,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, oh no, you're wrong. There was, like, a vent there or something.
And as soon as she admits that what he was saying was right about the vent, he admits, well, my incline was a little too steep all the same.
Oh, progress. Mm-hmm. Progress. It's almost like flirting with these two.
Constable Morse is also in her action sleeveless outfit.
You can't have sleeves if you're doing action.
You can't. You just can't. That's the rule.
I mean, I kind of follow this. I'm like, I'm not working out in sleeves.
I guess it also makes sense that, like, of everyone in this cast, Captain Hudson clearly has the most hauler experience.
Yeah.
He was not driving the yoke himself. He had, like, 50 dudes from that first, from the cold open scene.
Yeah.
While this seems to be, yeah, they get by with a crew of two. It's a different model, I guess.
Yes.
This is the scene where the two of them spend the most uninterrupted one-on-one time.
Yes.
What do we think of their relationship? What do we think of their acting chemistry? What do we think of, from any angle you want to answer that question, I guess, what do we think of their relationship?
I understand why they're not together. Because all of their scenes, mm-hmm. including this one, they are so ping pong ball back and forth
mm-hmm.
in different directions about, like, communicating with each other.
Yeah.
And, like, how they react to stuff. And just within this, like, they're, you know, accusing. And then, well, okay, maybe I didn't. It's fine. They have, like, a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like they can't help themselves. And, like, Hudson says something about, like, if I didn't leave first, you were gonna leave me. And that immediately snaps her back into, like, body slamming him out of the way. Like, you can't actually drive. They are so, like, explosions with each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe that's how it started. That's passion. That's excitement. But what I think really brings them together is that they are so alike.
Yes.
I mean, we've spent more time with Hudson than Morse, obviously. 3 episodes to 1. So I'm going to take it from his perspective. I don't think he would understand anyone too unlike him to get close.
Mm.
I think he needs someone who is so like him to, like, understand what they're thinking and where they're coming from. But also someone who is that much like him. Yeah, they're going to have one argument about who gets the shower first and then split up forever.
Yeah.
Be unable to find anyone else they gel with even a little bit and try again. And that, yeah, left at the altar twice. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like this. I think they're fun to watch together. I think it reveals a lot about them. I think this episode's mission is to turn Captain Hudson into a human being.
Yeah.
Using not just a woman, but, like, a complicated ex to do mm-hmm. that is sound strategy. It works. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, because the Captain Hudson we get most of the time is this very serious, stern,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
focused man.
He's captaining 100% of the time.
But when they're together, they're both so immature.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Like, they're like, so immature.
You can see them keeping score in their head.
Yes,
constantly.
They're keeping score. They're remembering, like, oh, it's like when you did this thing, like, 50 years ago. Not 50 years ago. But, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
That Thanksgiving with the da-da-da and mm-hmm. And it's like, not that you want us in a relationship, but it's kind of like that pettiness of siblings.
Yeah, yes, yes.
You know, where it's those type of, like, one-ups on each other.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
it's a very, again, different dynamic than what we see of Hudson the rest of the time that does, like, make him more human. Because, like, okay, you got this major flaw, buddy, and it is romantic relationships.
Yeah, yeah. But, like,
and she also has that flaw, too. Like, it's the two of you. This is not one person's fault. It's both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do like, too, is that they are both at fault from it. It's not she is evil or he's a complete asshole, right?
Right,
like, it's
right.
Both of them are problematic with each other.
They are a matched pair.
Yes.
And I feel like, there are bits of her that are Westphalen-y, or at least Westphalen's very first scene, where mm-hmm. she is telling off Ford about, like,
yes.
something procedural, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And Bridger is, like, hiding around the corner, like, oh, Jesus Christ, this lady.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you plant that seed and, like, prune it differently, grow in a different direction. Elaine Morse could come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, back on the bridge, Ford, sitting there, looks over and sees a very, very worried Lucas. And
yes!
is like, hey!
Yeah, oh, this bit is cute, yeah.
Anything wrong? And he's like, oh, nope, sensors are fine, sir, everything looks good, it's all good. And he's like, comes up to him and is like, no, I meant you?
Hey, pal, hey.
Okay? You doing okay, buddy?
I'm not the big H man, I'm the other one. We can talk. It's all right, bud.
And Lucas is feeling absolutely terrified and responsible mm-hmm. that people are out there for his idea and they might get killed. He's not handling this well.
And this is the first time we've seen... I don't think it's the first time we've, like, put people's lives on the line for a Lucas plan. Is it?
No,
it can't be.
It's not. Lucas has absolutely been the one to come up with plans before that puts people at risk. But I think it's showing a fact of his, like... He's older, he's maturing, he's, like, understanding the risk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
they're wrapping that in it being the first time this has been the case as an officer, mm-hmm. with the obligations of rank.
Yeah, because, like, in, you know, especially, like, season one, like, he has all these scientific ideas that they would, like, take and run with, and it, is this gonna save us, or are we all gonna die?
Yeah.
But... yeah, there's a different level to it. So he's not processing things well right now. He's mm-hmm. very worried, and he's like, he asks Ford, like, you know, do you ever get scared?
And Ford says, yeah, every time he gives an order. And like, oh man, that's, aw, that's what the kid needed to hear.
Ford's his new papa.
Ford is the new papa!
Ford is everyone's new papa.
I'll call him daddy, sure.
Henderson wants to call him daddy. over on the hauler, all the alarms are going off.
Yep. They've gone to a full stop, even though they're at full throttle. What gives? They mention, I don't know, magnets? I don't know.
All the sensors are dead. We don't know. And so Hudson shuts everything down to not, like, blow out all the engines. And we see this, like, big clamshell?
Yes.
Coming and, like, clamping around them.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a six-part jaw, two halves, but then the each half splits into three subparts that spread wider. And, like, I talked in the Brave New World episode about how just the design of this hauler sub sells its massive, massive size.
Mm-hmm.
And this... sub eats it. It just eats it. It's so yeah. big. It's so much. But yeah, it went from invisible and then decloaks and swallows it up. It is the Marauder involved?
Oh.
Is this a descendant from the Marauder's sub?
And meanwhile, in the Sequest, they can't get a channel through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And O'Neill's like, Jesus Christ, they're fucking gone.
Yeah,
they're just gone. They're not here. And you get a shot of, like, everyone's face taking this in, including Lucas, who is like, no, it's my fear!
Because O'Neill has Ortiz's job now. He's the sensor guy now.
And so we find out that, like, the sensors aren't picking up anything. The isotopes are even gone, like... Mm-hmm. But then Lucas realizes...
Which makes sense, because, like, if your idea for stealth is it's invisible... then anything that is inside your invisible envelope would also be invisible. Mm-hmm. No radar transmission, etc., etc.
Yes.
Okay, sure.
And Lucas is like, something is interrupting their link to the Whiskers, and he thinks giving them fake information, which makes Ford think, oh, they can fake with the Whiskers, but they can't, like, trick a dolphin. Darwin, go swim!
So Darwin gets to appear on the bridge and also talk. You know why?
Hudson's not here.
Hudson's not on the fucking boat.
Hudson's not here. And Darwin is so happy to help. He's like, Darwin, help Ford. I'm gonna go do this. This is great.
Yeah.
You should be the captain. Fuck that guy. He doesn't need to come back.
You're my real dad. Bye!
And so Darwin goes swimming off. On the hauler inside the clamshell,
mm-hmm.
Hudson and Morse are being escorted to a very red bridge.
Yes, yes, through these red halls into an evil red bridge. Ooh. And they see the captain of the sub, and it is that representative from Dion who expressed the Dion Global's congratulations earlier. Ah, of course, it's all a Dion plot.
Mm-hmm. They were like, we're stealing shit and getting insurance money. Yep. Fuck yeah.
Rather than pay for the ore, they're just going to steal it and get it for free, then claim the insurance costs to bide the time until their continued piracy just bankrupted the entire operation, and they could scoop it up for dirt cheap prices.
You know, if they looked into this more, I wouldn't be surprised if Deanne International took out life insurance policies on these haulers as well.
It's not the 1800s, dear. But yes, they absolutely did.
They absolutely did. They were like, yes, sir, we were going to take out a life insurance policy on you. It's not at all suspicious. Now go haul some stuff. Darwin comes back to the boat and announces that there is warm water.
Mm-hmm.
Someone peed really big. And Lucas gets the idea, and he goes, and he's like, aha, I have traces of heat. We can track this.
Because you can stealth all your radar, all your sensors, whatever. You cannot stealth hydrodynamics. Moving a large object through the water will agitate it and cause a discernible heat trail.
It's much better than if, like, I don't know, a whale just peed. Kind of gross. Tony was like, oh, shut up, they're swimming.
Guys, embarrassed.
And so they're like, okay, follow that heat pattern. And back on the hauler, Hudson and Morse are being escorted away from the bridge.
Through a hallway that is clearly the, like, maintenance shaft Sequest set repainted.
Yes.
But I like to imagine that the Sequest was such a successful ship, its systems have been iterated on and even straight up copied.
Yeah.
And that is why this exact hallway, but painted red, is in this different ship. That's what I like to tell myself, and it's a nice story.
So they pause, and Hudson stops and, like, puts his hand on Elaine's cheek. And, like, they say some things to each other, and then
if this is to be the end,
let's fucking make out.
Yes, they have hot makeouts.
And until the guards have to come and, like, break them up. And then they punch those guards in the fucking face.
Because they're tactical makeouts. It was a distraction.
So then they've got now the guns, and they're going down the hallway, and they're like, oh no, there's more guards. What are we gonna do? And she's like, well, you could always kiss me again. And Hudson's like, well, or we can take the easy way out, which is shooting people.
Bridger would never. Nathan Hale Bridger would never run and gun through the hallways like this.
But Hudson will.
He'd do, like, some, like, pressure differential subsystem futzing and be like, oh, well, this is based on Sequest design, blah, 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 blah. No, fucking shoot him. Just shoot him.
Shoot them the fuck up. They're the bad guys. They bust into the bridge and put the guns on everyone. Just as, like, Sequest is firing, like, torpedoes at them.
Yeah.
And so he has to get a channel to the Sequest and is like, no, no, it's us, it's me, I promise. And so they're like, self-destruct the torpedoes.
The message gets through just before his own crew kills him dead.
Yes.
Yay.
They would have thought about it a lot more if it was Captain Bridger. Gonna say
it's what the new guy would have wanted. Fire one, no. Fire two, let's go.
No one even thought, like, oh man, maybe we shouldn't fire on that ship because they might have Captain Hudson on board. They were all like, fuck it.
They most surely executed him immediately. We're safe. It's
I would
fine.
Like
see Dion, Mr. Dion, Larry, if you'll allow, the problem with automation is two people just arrested your entire submarine.
You need more guns.
You need more dudes.
You need more dudes.
You gotta build a sub where people have to actually, like, turn things with cranks or whatever.
So they all have, so you, like, have wrenches. More dudes. And wrenches they can just wail on people with. So they send over some crew to arrest people.
The day is saved. Hooray!
Yay! And so now we are at the launch. And it is time for Elaine Morse to go on her merry way.
Mm-hmm. She's got a job to do. She lives here. She's a constable.
Yeah. And so she hands him a box as a parting gift. And he's, like, very excited. Like, oh, you didn't have to. And then he's like, wait, this is my book.
Now, I, in the course of my life, have never, like, had to get stuff back that I left behind at an ex's place. That's not a life experience I've had.
You're welcome.
is gift wrap traditional for this sort of exchange? I was never led to believe that was the case until now.
You really want to fuck with someone. So yeah, he gets his book back. He also is given his cyber violin.
Yes, his electric violin. It is not exactly the Starship Troopers electric violin, but it is of a family.
It is bright blue. She's like, yeah, here's your shit from the last time you took off. He's like, I didn't take off, you threw me out. And then he decides to go in for a kiss, and she's like, no.
Nope, goodbye. Nope, we're not doing that.
Handshake.
There is no one here to punch. We're not doing that.
And so she leaves, and Hudson goes walking down the hallway, and we get some little check-ins. He's like, hey, Dagwood. And Dagwood's like, I'm back.
He says, I expected to see you with your kind, and Dagwood's response is, quote, I am with my own kind. And that's that, then. The last we saw of Rachel was her being like, I'm reverse racist, because that's a thing that's real and exists. And then apparently Dagwood said, no thank you, goodbye.
And Lucas has finished his diagnostics. He has solved the problem. And Piccolo is tasked with reading his book, The Red Badge of Courage.
Captain Hudson has now chosen his special boy, and it is not Lucas Walencheck.
Well, no, because Lucas has chosen Ford. Everyone's imprinted.
O'Neill is paired with that big silly hat he woke up in, Indonesian dance club.
I was going to say Jesus.
Jesus is my censor chief?
That's the end of the episode.
I'm sure someone in Ortiz's allegedly gigantic Cuban family is named Jesus, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a Jesus Ortiz somewhere.
It's his twin brother.
That's how they bring him back.
O'Neill has kept in touch.
they just put Marco Sanchez in, like, a mustache or something?
Yeah! He's a paleontologist.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. I can't wait to see what kind of weird, fucked up fossils they find in 2032.
Yeah, a lot of dinosaur bones and Aztec.
Sure.
So, darling, that was the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from one of the storylines.
Yes.
I think overall, we really like this episode.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes.
It's so good.
The Lucas stuff is some really good Lucas stuff, and the actual adventure plot is a great thing to hang our Hudson stuff on. Ford interjects some really good material, and like Henderson continues to just like be there in the corner, providing some color into everything in positive ways. Yeah, this is a really good one that like. I don't know what you thought you were doing with the dagger stuff, but you should have done something else. I really love the idea of there being dagger culture and Dagwood getting exposed to that. But what he actually meets is Sherbet and a lady with...
say Sherbet word.
Sherbet! He's sherbeting it up. Sherbety-doo-bop-bop.
Okay.
You say it.
Sherbert.
Yeah.
That's not what you're saying.
No, it's not.
No.
There's only one R in it. When I say it, at least.
It's weird.
Well, that's my Flint accent, you see.
Yeah,
It's different on the east side of the state. Yeah.
Envelope thing.
The word is envelope. It's
envelope.
It's pronounced envelope.
It's envelope.
Tell it if you got a fish fact, because the show sure doesn't.
I do! So, have you ever heard of Sir Wilmot Hudson Fish?
There's a Hudson Fish?
There's a Hudson Fish!
A Sir Wilmot Hudson Fish?
Yes!
This fish has been knighted? What does that mean? Tell me about this fish.
He was an Australian aviator and businessman who lived from 1895 to 1974.
unless that business was like fisheries, he should not be in contact with fish. An aviator should not be dealing with the fishes. A mistake has been made.
Well, he's also a founder of the Australian airline company Qantas.
Okay, Qantas never crashes. I learned that from Rain Man. They have no business with fish.
Well, did you know what the name of that airline stands for?
Is the A Australia? Is either of the A's Australia? No. Then I have no guesses.
Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services.
Oh, that makes sense, though. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, because it was, when it was founded, it was a little airline that served Queensland and Northern Territory.
Sure, and then the rest of Australia, and then international service.
Yes.
I see.
So, when it originally started, it was, the plan was for it to be, because it was, like, in the 20s, it was to be, like, an air taxi, and then, like, kind of joyriding thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then they decided to get into airmail services.
Mm-hmm.
Which would, like, start to link, you know, the settlements and whatnot.
I feel like we're getting away from the fish.
And then it, another plan that came forward with, like, this other guy who joined the team of, like, people in charge of the airline.
Mm-hmm.
He was a doctor, and,
this is not Sir Hudson.
This is not okay. Sir Hudson Fish, no. This dude is, Frederick Archibald Michold.
Okay.
Okay? So, he, like, visiting, like, cattle stations and private, like, properties to give, like, medical treatment. And he was like, wow, it's really hard to get out here to Outback. And so he established, like, a house or hospital, and then, like, would use aircraft from them as, like, aerial ambulances.
Ooh.
And then that led to, like, a flying, like, doctor.
Okay.
Thing in the 20s too. So that's like how the airline started, and then they got into like commercial, like actual, you know, flying people back and forth stuff, and expanded from there. But all because of Sir Hudson Fish and a few other guys who founded it. So that's your fish fact.
So there's no actual fish.
There's no fish.
There's a man named Fish.
I
did not realize that until this moment. I thought
it's
the guy's last name was Hudson. And then he discovered a fish, even though he was a commercial
it's
flight guy.
FYSH.
Okay.
I searched Hudson Fish, and this is what I got.
You got Hudson Fish with a Y, because it's not a fish, it's a man's name.
Yeah.
It's a man with many names.
Yes.
One of them being Sir.
Yes.
Okay.
And he started an airline.
Well, I've got a Hudson fact.
You do?
I do.
Is it a fish?
It's not, and I'm going to tell you that right now. It's not going to be a surprise twist ending that it's spelled different.
I didn't think it would. I talked about, like, I said a name, I said how long he was alive.
And I expected you to say that, and then in this year he discovered this fish.
And then in this year he became a fish.
The incredible Mr. Limpet, the incredible Sir Limpet. So yes, Hudson, you might recognize as the name of a company that operates 970 stores in 87 airports and transportation terminals across North America.
Oh, that Hudson. So I immediately thought
Hudson of... Hudson Newsstands.
I immediately thought of the old Hudson's department store.
No, no. These are the new Hudson's. Opened their very first Hudson News in 1987. A fairly recent company in LaGuardia Airport. But since then, they've become the largest operator of airport newsstands, serving over 300,000 travelers every single day. Recently, over the last 10 years or so, they've even opened locations in Las Vegas hotels.
Mm.
And maybe...
Another place to get your overpriced goldfish.
Yeah, maybe when we flew into LaGuardia last fall, we might have seen the first Hudson News ever.
Whoa.
What if?
Whoa.
And there's your Hudson fact.
We both had Hudson facts.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to keep it up all 13 episodes, but my idea behind the Hudson facts is to subtly, unconsciously make the point that season 3 is very Hudson-centric.
It is, yeah.
Season 1 is, like, really centered on the inner family, the, mm-hmm. the, like, found family triangle.
Mm-hmm.
season two wants to really spread the ensemble very wide, very even. But season three goes from an ensemble of seven to Hudson plus six.
Hudson Lucas plus. Like, different tiers.
It's Hudson, the two or three that Hudson is working closely with this week, and then everyone else in the B and C plots.
Yeah.
It's not every episode. It's more than half of them, though.
Well, I'm trying to keep fish at the forefront.
Yes, no matter how it's spelled.
Sometimes you gotta take what you can get.
But anyhow, that's all we have for you today here at Whiskers.
Yeah, that's what we got. So, you know what you should do?
What should they do?
You should leave us a rating and review, because it's a nice thing to do and it makes us feel good.
And if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to read it, and I'm going to have a good time doing it.
Yeah.
We would also like you to tell the people in your lives about Whiskers.
Perhaps your almost ex-wife.
Perhaps your double not wife.
You know,
it happens to some people, yeah. I'm told.
Yeah.
The big example I can think of right now is fictional, but don't let that stop you.
Don't let it stop you. You can also follow us on Blue Sky. We are there as Whiskers, WSKRS.
Having a very, very good time over there. If you want to see pictures of all the, filming locations we mentioned in our episode on Brave New World, that's where you're gonna see it. It's fun. I do like looking up some material like that where I know what to look for, at least, and sharing it there. It's fun. It's a good time.
Yeah.
It's a good supplement, I guess, to the main episodes.
Yes. So, yeah, do those things. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
damn it, Elaine!